And welcome back to A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott.
And I'm Dennis O'Hare. For years, some of the state government's biggest battles over money and policy have been fought with Alan Essig in the middle. Among other posts, he was a deputy policy director for Democratic Governor Roy Barnes. Then in 2004, Essig became the first director of the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute, a fiscal think tank. He is stepping down at the end of this month to move to Michigan, where, by the way, his wife has a new job. Alan Essig joins us now. Welcome, and congratulations to your wife.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You worked for a Democratic governor. You worked in state government under Democratic administrations prior to becoming one of Roy Barnes's deputy policy advisors. And many of your reports at the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute since have criticized Republican administrations, or particularly over things like cuts to education. That's just one example. But they, in turn, have complained that your numbers, while often accurate, just don't tell the whole story. So are you an advocate first or an analyst first?
An analyst first. I mean, the numbers is what counts. We are a nonpartisan organization. We're not, you know, Democrat or Republican, but we do have a point of view. Government's important. Funding for education, funding for health care, funding for public safety is an important mission of the state. And we, you know, talk about where the funds come from, how to spend the funds effectively, what is the impact when things are underfunded. Georgia has always been a fiscally conservative state. They were a fiscally conservative state when Democrats ran. They're a fiscally conservative state now, and they always will be. It's the political culture of the state.
But you said government is important, and then that brings up the question of the size of government. Are you saying you just differ with the Republicans in what you think government should be doing?
It's how to solve the problem. We rank among the lowest in the country in education outcomes. We rank among the lowest in the country in our health care outcomes. We're among the lowest in the country in how we treat the elderly, how we treat children. And at the same time, we're one of the lowest tax and spend states in the country.
But part of their argument would be, look, it's because of failed government efforts in things like education, in things like health care, and that really we ought to be looking at alternatives to government for those things, and we might get better results.
Again, it's not an either-or situation. It's not black or white. It's not we're right and somebody else is wrong. The answers to these are more complicated than that. Dollars are not the end-all be-all of public policy problems, but dollars do matter. So how do you spend dollars as effectively and efficiently as possible? How do you raise the dollars in as fair a manner as possible to try to solve the problems facing the state? I think it's highly naive if it's the public policy goal of the state to be the lowest tax and spend state in the country, there are some impacts of that. Again, Georgia, I think, always will be a fiscally conservative state. We always will be a low tax and spend state, and there are some benefits to that. But is it the overriding goal to be the lowest, or is there room to be very competitively economically with our neighboring states and make smart investments to improve the outcomes of the things that are very important for economic development?
Alan, the Institute is actually part of the State Fiscal Analysis Initiative, which some people may not know that, and that's part of a national or network collaborative. When you all are taking on these issues, which are education, taxes, economic development, issues like poverty, is there a sort of a national specific on issues that all of the institutes are focusing on, or is it state specific, where region really matters?
It's very state specific, and it actually they changed the name to the State Priorities Partnership.
Really?
They just did that about 6 months ago. They rebranded themselves. It's a network of like-minded institutes, but each one focuses on the problems of their state. So it's more of a resource than it is of we all do the same thing or come up with the same analysis or have the same recommendations. They're very state-specific. I mean, the work we do here is very different from the similar organization in California or New York or Massachusetts.
And when you talk about a state like Georgia, which has a huge rural population too, because I imagine there are issues that are specific to that population, particularly when you all do your reporting about poverty and as it relates to Georgians. And getting to that, when you do a report like that, and the first thing we hear is that, well, you're not encompassing maybe the whole story because you're just focusing on a particular population. But when you talk about poverty in Georgia after the recession, where Georgia sort of had, bounced back, but that population did not, Where do you see where Georgia has to, what Georgia has to do to improve the outcomes for poor Georgians?
Income inequality is something that is a national issue and is something that affects Georgia, you know, and something that affects Atlanta. It's something that's, you know, very prevalent issue dealing with rural Georgia. Georgia is a state with a good economy, a lot of wealthy folks, but we also have pockets of extreme poverty. And the rural areas, I think it's worse than in a lot of other places. You know, the poverty in cities like Atlanta or Augusta or Columbus are different from and the policy solutions you're looking for are somewhat different from the poverty in some of the more rural parts of the state, whether it's North or South Georgia. And it deals with, you know, education. It deals with the ability of locals to pay for their share of the education, and that's impactful when the state ends up cutting state education funds. There are some areas of the state that are better situated to make up for some of that money. Transportation is a huge issue in rural Georgia. It's a different problem than in Atlanta, but it's still an issue down there, too.
And so, for example, cuts in education to a district like the city of Atlanta, the Atlanta Public Schools, may look differently than in the southern part of Daugherty County, for example.
Right. It's the property tax base. If the state is going to cut their share of the education funding, some of the more wealthier districts can raise money locally to make up for that, and a lot easier than some of the poorer districts can.
Let's talk about some of those education cuts, because everybody of all political persuasion says we're for continuing to fund education. But when Governor Barnes left office, state reserves at the time were very low, and subsequent Republican governors built them back up again. And since education is by far the biggest part of the state budget, in order to get those reserves back out, didn't some of the cuts have to come from education?
That's part of the message that we've talked about. I think governors, whether it was Governor Barnes, Governor Perdue, and now Governor Deal, have all been very, very responsible in building back up reserves. Reserves are there to be used. And you know, Governor Barnes had healthy reserves considered at the time. It was used by Governor Perdue during the recession of 2001-2002. Governor Perdue built those reserves up to well beyond what Governor Barnes had, and just about every penny was used in the Great Recession of 2007. And over the last several years, Governor Deal has been building up the reserves again. And it's part of the what I call the fiscal plan of the state. If revenues are off the table, if we're never going to talk about how to increase, you know, that three-letter word thou shalt not use of the capital, which is tax or fee, if that's off the table, then we have X amount of dollars to spend, and we have to split it up as best as we can.
And as the economy has improved, Governor Deal's argument has been, look, we've reduced the size of what are called the austerity cuts, which have been around for a decade or more, and he's actually boosted the size of the education budget. So isn't that argument one that certainly the GOP could argue makes sense? Look, we did what we had to do, and now we're back trying to restore what had been cut from education.
I guess the question is, a lot of damage has been done to the school systems over the last 6-7 years. Could we have avoided that damage? I mean, clearly, and I give the governor credit, you know, you can tell when he has additional funds in the budget, he has spent the majority of them on education. So when we had about a $1 billion austerity cut in the education funding formula for several years in a row, the last couple of years, he's cut that to $750 last year. If the budget passes as it is, and it looks like it's going to, we'll be down to under $500 million. But there's still an austerity cut. After, you know, 7 years after the recession, we still have that. And there's been huge impacts of that $1 billion every year. So the question is, if we had done something about that 6 or 7 years ago.
Like what?
And again, it comes back to, should we have increased taxes at some point? And again, that's an honest philosophical difference and question. And it's one of the misleading things about the revenue growth, because revenues are growing, and revenues are growing average about 5%.
Each month when we get the release from the governor's office, it always says, you know, hey, it's increasing. Yeah. It keeps going up.
No, and that's a good thing, but that's normal. It's abnormal for revenues not to grow. Since the 1930s, revenues declined year to year only 3 times, and that's been 3 times in the last 12 years. So the normal is to grow. It's a question of how fast does it grow, and does it grow fast enough to fund what the state needs to do. In non-recession years, between 1992 and 2007, before the Great Recession, normal revenue growth averaged about 8%. We've been averaging about 5% in the last several years. That's a difference of about $600 million a year. So although revenues are growing, they're growing below what the typical non-recession growth has been over a long period of time.
So are you saying in touting every month about the revenue growth continuing to increase, that that's sort of misleading in a sense?
A little misleading. I mean, it's all good. It's all positive. It's better than declining. But it's not growing at historical norm. And if you look at what the just the normal growth of the business of the state, again, we're, you know, including federal funds, we're about a $35, $40 billion business. We have retiree obligations. We have state health benefit obligations. We have Medicaid obligations. We have growth in K through 12 schools, growth in higher ed. That eats up the majority of the revenue growth, which is why we could have new revenues of $1 billion, which we have this year. And that sounds like a lot of money, that why am I complaining? But about $600 million of that is spent on just keeping the ship of state afloat, which is why the governor is not able to eliminate the education austerity cut. He can only decrease it by about $280 million because most of that other growth is spent on just keeping keeping us level.
But Governor Deal has reduced the size of the austerity cuts, and that has actually boosted the size of the education budget.
Yeah, no, and that's that's a positive thing. And that's, you can tell it has been a priority of his, but there's still a sizable austerity cut in the budget. I mean, we still, this year, and I'm not sure, we'll see what happens next year with the additional money he's put in, but this year, there are still schools that are not, students are not in class 180 days. There are still teachers being furloughed. Class sizes are much larger than they used to be. There are impacts to those cuts still being felt, 6-7 years into a recovery with revenues growing.
And that was the argument that you all made, particularly when Governor Deal, when he was doing his campaign, and he was saying, I'm going to add more and more to the budget for education. And so, in a sense, for the listener out there that hears all these numbers, basically what you're saying is, this sounds great now, but you have to look back, you have to go back some years to understand how we got to this point in the first place.
And again, the money that has helped ameliorate the problem has been a small part of the additional money for education. Most of the money going for education is to pay for new students, is to pay for the growth. If we don't fund that, it's really the equivalent of a cut. It means we have to hire all these new teachers without additional funds. So spending money on that is keeping us level. And so the governor does that, which is, again, all positive and all good and the norm of a non-recession year. And then he has some money left over to lessen the austerity cut. But again, we still haven't eliminated it yet. So we still have schools struggling, spending less on supplies, less on materials, fewer elective classes. All of those impacts are still being felt at various schools around the state. And they're being felt worse in the schools in the poorer districts with the lower property tax base who don't have the local capability to make up for the state funds that are lacking.